This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5.0 out of 10 dining experience, the objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good. Friend of the Doughboys, Marissa Pinson and John Glover were the most recent guests as they reviewed Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many Costco hot dogs they could fit in their mouths. Damn, I wish I was on that episode. I'd crush that. Head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast, FINEDININGPODCAST, and click B's giveaway to enter a giveaway for an all-expenses-paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current frontrunner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at 5.02 out of 10, for you and up to three of your friends. And you can watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th episode. Disclaimer, $50 will be provided for transportation along with a $200 Applebee gift card. I love doing those fast read disclaimer things. Go give Fine Dining a listen, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America. What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy. The number one fuckboy. All you gotta do is trust me. Johnny G. Joining me in the High and Mighty studios is my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, give the people a shout out. What do you gotta say? You're turning 11 soon. Any news for the people? That's a solid no from Arthur. By the way, for listeners, Arthur is a dog. I do not have a person that sits here and does not talk in quarantine. Also joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, first-time guest. We've crossed paths a dozen-plus times in the last 10 years, but I'm a fan of hers, and you will be, too, if you aren't already. From Difficult People and the Double Threat Podcast, it's Julie Klausner.
Hi, John.
Hi, Julie. How are you?
I'm okay. I didn't expect that you were going to go full morning zoo for your intro, but I like it and I'm on board, board, board.
You're on board. Welcome, Klausner. You are okay. On High and Mighty.
Sure, fine. Let's go. Yes, and.
I know. I'm humiliated by the fact that I got into podcasting with my only experience being like 20 years of listening to Howard and Opie and Anthony.
What about sports radio? Did you ever listen to any of those goons?
Yeah, Mike and the Mad Dog every day in my house growing up.
Oh, my God. Well, there you go. I mean, that's certainly an aesthetic.
Yeah, my dad worked nights, so he didn't leave for work until like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So that meant every day was blasting on his boombox while he worked out and did chores. We had Howard, then ONA, and then Mike and the Mad Dog. And sometimes Imus.
I was going to ask about Imus.
My dad was a big Imus fan. We all sort of turned our backs on Imus around the same time. But he that's what I grew up on. And so that's like literally every, like while getting ready for school, Opie and Anthony would be playing in my house.
I must admit that my dad went through an Imus phase as well. And I must admit, in addition to that, that while we may not like what he had to say, we all have to agree that he looked really cool in that cowboy hat.
Just like, what? How insanely at it, like a guy's like, I'm going to start wearing a cowboy hat and saying racially charged remarks in my show. It's like
but and yet it's so East Coast. You know what I mean? Right. It would be like if Curtis Sliwa traded his beret for, you know, a trucker hat or something. And you're like, you're from the Bronx. You're the most Bronx guy ever. But Imus, here's my next question. Is Imus dead?
Oh, that's a great question.
It's a great question.
He has to be.
Let's not Google and let's not find out.
No, let's not. Either way, it's an either way we'll be sad.
Either way, it's a tragedy.
Yeah, either way he's dead and that's sad, or he's alive and he outlived my dad, which is sad.
And that's even worse.
Yeah. Wait, so did you grow up in the New York area to knowing all these or
Yeah. I grew up in Westchester and my dad is from the Bronx and my mom is from Brooklyn and they lived in Manhattan when I was born. They lived in Gramercy on 2nd Avenue and I think 24th Street. And I was born in 78, which is the year after the fabled Summer of Sam with the blackout. And
you were born in the Summer of Julie, as they were calling
it. I was
it.
Born in the Summer of Sam. Here comes Sam Moore. It's Julie. But my mom likes to tell me I was conceived during the 77 blackout, which doesn't make sense mathematically, but it's nice to know they were having sex.
Yeah. You're like, that doesn't work out math wise, mom, but I appreciate
you for getting laid 43 years ago. Here's a fucking medal. But yes, we are a very New York family, and then, you know, we went up to the suburbs, and I grew up in Scarsdale with a bunch of Jewish, you know, I'm gonna say other Jewish princesses, even though I've got, you know, my own stuff going with like a relationship towards that stuff. And then I went to NYU, so I've lived in New York City for 24 years now.
Hell,
I've lived
yeah.
in Manhattan. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're
wow.
very we're New York Jews.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, we're New York Italians, but not from.
Okay.
My grandparents lived in Astoria and Long
okay.
Island.
We're on the island?
Now South Shore of Nassau County.
Okay.
I grew up in Freeport.
Okay.
I grew up surrounded by black and Hispanic people, then moved mm-hmm. to Belmore, where I was surrounded okay. by the aforementioned princesses. I got
yeah,
to meet them.
I mean, look, we're all a combination of Japs and trash, and
yes.
that's what makes New York. That's what makes New York, New York. And also that, you know, Jews and Italians, even though there's definitely like we all have, you know, unique racisms, there is a familiarity and a bond amongst us specifically that is just we both know where we're coming from. It's almost like Israelis and Palestinians. It's like, well, that's actually a terrible example. We're not like yeah. Israelis and Palestinians. We all like hummus, is I guess what I was trying to say, but we're nothing like that at all. Actually, I'm going to step back very, very briskly.
I was like, I'm out of my depth here. I trust you.
So am I.
Well, Italians and Jews have a lot in common in that,
yes.
like, we have weird, complicated mom,
yep.
like a matriarchal sort of
yep.
Thing
absolutely.
Going on.
Absolutely, mom's in charge.
And then food equals love or medicine,
absolutely.
Like or therapy, like
absolutely all of the above, and then it's also poison when they're mad at you and they suddenly realize you're fat. You're like, I've been fat my whole fucking life. Why do you now know and care? Yup, that's there too.
That was like what I told my parents when I was like 16. I'm like, well, you know, I'm fat because you guys clap when I finish my plate. So like, and I'm seeking love from my and attention from my parents.
They
who,
applaud, really?
Not really, but it was like, look at Jonathan's coming over. He's got an appetite. Jonathan, I made your favorite
yeah.
meatball here. Like every aunt
well,
and uncle.
It's very joyful. I mean, it's a really fabulous compliment when you cook something and someone likes it. I mean, there's really a wonderful sense of pride to that experience.
It's a perfect dynamic. It's like a receptive audience to a wonderful bit. Like,
yeah, it's great.
When grandma whips out a tray of meatballs and her chubby little grandson comes running in and eats 18 meatballs, like eats more meatballs than his uncles. Like, and everyone's like, Jonathan has such an appetite. And I'm
yeah.
like, adults like me. This will be how I get
like
attention.
Me, but, but also, you guys, you Italians, if I may, you also just have objectively delicious food. I mean, you ate 18 meatballs because every one of those meatballs was fucking delicious. Whereas my grandmother on my father's side made cocktail meatballs with grape jelly and ketchup in the sauce. And I'll tell you something, those were pretty good too.
That did not stop me or slow me down for a split second. I was like, ooh.
I mean, yeah, but I will say if I had grown up Italian, I would definitely be, and I've always had like weight issues and issues around food, but if I were Italian, forget it. I would just be I'd have to like need help getting out of the house. I'd be so fat because I remember I had a roommate in college who had me home and she was from Queens and she had me for Easter one year and I was just walloped course after course of just the best pasta you've ever had. The best. Any time you've gone to an Italian restaurant, just like everything that's on the menu, preemie, you know, the whole thing. And then once you're done with this beautiful Italian feast. Then they bring out the turkey. Then they bring out the ham. Meanwhile, there's candy everywhere. It was just, I'd never experienced anything like it in my life.
Well, Italians, we have two attitudes towards food. Obviously, quality. We love to like build and work on stuff. But there's something about quantity. And I think it's sort of more Italian-American too. And blue-collar American, where it's like the bang for your buck. Like,
absolutely.
My mom and dad referred to chicken parm by its size per, like, oh, my dad would be like, Johnny, Umberto's, they give you a fucking chicken parm like a doormat. And it's like, how does it taste? It doesn't matter. It's fucking huge. You can take, you can eat half of it.
Parm.
Bring it. I know.
Have you ever had bad chicken parm?
Oh, you mean breading cheese sauce and fried in olive oil? Those are like, that's the whole, that's my Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. That's all I need.
It doesn't need to be chicken. It could be cardboard. It don't matter. That's the best food ever. It doesn't matter how, because that's the idea, is that it's, you're just assuming that it's delicious. So you're right. Size, plenty, you know, Italian serve family style, which means that you're supposed to pass something around, but you really don't, because portion wise, it's all worked out that everyone's going to get a platter worth of food. But you're right. It definitely betrays a certain amount of scarcity. The appreciation of this, you know, giant thing that I'm going to have to take home later, it makes you feel safe.
Yeah, I think I think I'm ripping this off Bourdain's Naples episode, but the Italian Americans, when they came to, they couldn't believe how much beef they could get. So that's where like the fucking softball sized meatball and like the trays of stuff came from, because beef was so a lot of the stuff was so scarce in the old country. When they came to America, they're like, I'm going to give my son the biggest fucking meatball he's ever seen.
Sure. Oh, that's interesting. Because I also love, you know, I love Italian, like the Italian food you have in Italy as much as American Italian food. I mean, that in its own right is just incredible. Whereas, like, I know that there's sometimes you can have a big preference to Chinese American food as opposed to Chinese food. There's a big disparity.
Right, right.
But Italian food, I think it's very simple.
I think you're right. I think like Italian food and versus Italian American food and Chinese food versus Chinese American food is really on display in our topic here in New York. The main things I miss from East Coast food, having moved to LA a few years ago, is you can get decent Italian out here now, despite there being no like Little Italy or anything.
Yeah, and also Italian's hard to fuck up.
Yeah, but God forbid you can find General Tso's west of the Mississippi. I just cannot.
Is that true?
So many places don't have it. They have orange chicken, sesame chicken, or General's chicken, but none of it is the same. Whereas in New York, it's like if you like one of the things when I would go back to visit for stupid gigs or whatever, they'd always put me up at some random hotel in Midtown, and I'd be like, my plan is whatever the closest Chinese, I have my favorites, but whatever the closest Chinese food place is, I'm trying it, because I'm running this theory that like the fucking most random ass Chinese food restaurant in Manhattan is better than any Chinese food you can find out here. With the
Chinese American food, not the Bay Area. You're not talking about the Bay Area, because the Bay Area is its own.
They've got it. Yeah.
They're not messing around out there.
And also, we have San Gabriel Valley, where there's like a lot of like real deal authentic Chinese restaurants, which are fucking awesome. Like,
I don't know anything about San Gabriel Valley and the Chinese restaurants there. Tell me everything.
But there's like, it's like outside of LA in the SGV, it's like so many
like
Chinese
Szechuan?
Immigrants. Yeah, Szechuan, a lot of dim sum places.
I love dim sum.
I'm telling, and it's like one of the best things about living in a major city in America is that you can get this feeling of being somewhere else entirely. You get it in Manhattan, just no matter how expensive and crazy Manhattan gets, you'll still can go into a restaurant and be like, I can't believe we're currently in America.
Yeah.
And,
San
Gabriel Valley has those places where I'm like, I'm a 45-minute drive from my house, and I'm just pointing at shit on a menu. I can't pronounce anything. I can't speak any of this language.
Oh, so you don't have any allergies that you need to worry about? You can go into a restaurant and just say, surprise me?
Oh, I have the fucking like GI tract of a billy goat. I can
I'm so jealous, because I'm always anxious with someone with allergies and food restrictions. I wish I was someone that like ate anything or ate everything. I think I'd have a better life.
Oh, I could only imagine, especially with like food where the host doesn't speak English, the waiter doesn't speak English, and you're like,
exactly.
Please tell me there's no garlic in this. I will inflate.
I have allergies, and I'm newly vegan, which is very, very challenging. And I don't like being one of those people. I don't like the associations with it. It's just something that I did for me and not for, you know, how I'm perceived. But I really do. I love it when someone just says I eat anything. And I think it's a very attractive trait. But, you know,
I see what you're saying, though, like, you don't go in and go like, I'm vegan. You'll be like, you'll just like low key be like, okay, this is the vegan option. I'll order this. You don't have, but like, there is that fear.
I will take the server aside. Oh, I'll lower my voice. I don't want to be the difficult, and especially because it's like, look, I'm like a white woman. I'm going to seem like a Karen. I don't want to make everybody's experience there annoying, more irritating than they already have to endure, you know, dining with me to begin with, just to hang out with me. I usually just take the server aside, and on the down low, I'm like, listen, I have two really annoying things I'm about to tell you. One is I'm vegan, and the other, I have a couple allergies. Usually they're very nice. It didn't used to be like that growing up, though. People are way more tolerant about, you know, allergies and things like that.
I've got some friends with, like, now we all have friends with food allergies, and I live in Los Angeles, so, like, if eight of us go out to dinner, there's a chance. Yes. Like, there's a chance there's eight different diets on display.
Oh,
at
and
that
especially
given
in LA, and I respect that, and we'll also. I will never tell a server that I have an allergy to something that I simply don't like, because I think that is absolutely immoral. And as someone who does have allergies, just completely unacceptable and so shitty.
It's like stolen allergy valor.
It's like saying you have a disability when you don't want to walk upstairs. Like, no, that's not the same. Absolutely not. But I love dim sum. And I will say, you know, since I stopped eating like animal stuff, I have been in carb heaven, which is a beautiful, beautiful place for me, because I've tried, I don't know if you've ever like dieted, but the only like cutting out starches to me is really just cutting out any reason to live. Sweets and starches are just like mommy and daddy as far as I'm concerned.
That's really funny. Those sweets and starches are on my first to go overboard if I need to start, when I need
to
start.
They're hard to stop eating. There's no question. But if they're missing from my diet and they're missing from my life, I definitely feel like I've given something up that hurts, that I like, that I actually like miss my friends or family somehow.
I have no sweets. I can have ice cream. I can have sweets, but I have no, they have no power over me.
Really?
It's portions that have power over me. I cannot feel full.
So you're a size queen.
I'm a size, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting.
And my wife would explain to me how that's very ironic, and I don't have to go into any more details about that.
Oh, no. So are you the kind of person? Well, yeah, you're a big guy anyway.
Yeah,
you're six what?
I'm 6'2", 300 pounds, and I'm a size queen.
Well, I mean, that kind of makes sense. I don't think that's ironic at all. I mean, are you the kind of person that just wants a lot no matter what it is? Like, could you eat like a giant salad, or are you just like, fuck that?
That is what I have to do. When I'm eating my healthiest is when I'm eating giant salads and like tons of lean protein, fish and chicken and shit.
Yes, yes. Because apparently that fills you up. Like, protein is best for, what's that called? Satiety, I think? Like, to make you satiated?
Oh, yeah. Satiatedness? Satiation?
Yeah, something like that. Something like that. But I wish I liked salads more. I just feel like I don't know. Eating, like, a lot of raw vegetables, it makes me feel like it's a task. It feels very homeworky. It does feel like I'm grazing. So it's challenging to be a vegan that's not crazy about vegetables.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, some I like. I love the tomato. I guess the tomato is a fruit, but you know, I love that. I like artichokes, you know. But I'm not great at. Are you a cook? Do you cook?
I am a bit of a cook.
That's good.
My wife is enjoys cooking and is very good at it.
That's great.
I'm like could live alone in a pandemic and survive kind of cook.
Got it.
I would have a hard time hosting people. Like my wife cooks for friends. Like that's something she has the ability to do.
Oh, that's great.
Me, I'm like I can whip up whatever I want, but I'm my best customer because right. as you've heard, who cares about? I'm just here for
right,
portions,
it's just quantity. Yeah. I am a beautiful baker. I bake beautifully. I can do some really really amazing things with baking, but cooking, I've never quite figured out. I don't know if it's because I'm scared of fire. There's a certain improvisational quality to it that makes me anxious. There's a certain alchemy that happens magically that I've just never quite gotten my hand. I don't know. Like there's too many variables. That's because they say like, oh, you need to be more precise with baking. It's like, yeah, it's math and 2 + 2 = 4. Whereas cooking, there's just so many opportunities to go wrong. And that's where I am not great at,
Oh, see, fun and
good
like
at it.
I'm not good at baking at all because I'm not good at exact. I'm not even like my style of cooking is slow and low, so it's like unfuckable.
Oh, okay,
it's always like, oh, bake it in the oven on low, or use right. the slow pot, or put the pan on low and put the sauce like all
and you
that.
You can do that. That's
I interesting. Can do all that. But my wife, she can't bake at all because it's too many rules. She's very good. Like she can look at a recipe and judge it how she wants,
wow,
which is why
okay.
she can't bake because, and I'm
oh,
not trying
that's
to.
That's so interesting. No, that's fascinating to me. I also wonder if it's because you're an improviser that you can have, you know, a little bit more elasticity with how things are going to go. I guess there comes along with that, like a certain confidence.
Yeah. I'm not good at rules and like mm-hmm. I have a hard time keeping track of them. And I'm realizing now what I'm describing is like the root of like my wife doesn't like anyone to tell her what to do. And I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. that includes a recipe. Like she's just like,
really?
No, no, no. She's like, no, more like because of quarantine, we've been doing yes. some recipes. Some of the
yes.
don't tell anyone the Allison Roman recipes.
Oh, please. Here's the thing about Allison Roman. She and obviously I'm sure that there's things that she's done that are horrible and maybe she stole this recipe, but she is responsible for publishing that recipe that has coconut milk and chickpeas and turmeric that everyone I know is making this winter, even yes. people I know who don't cook, including me. And it was outstanding. It's so good. It's like a turmeric vegan stew and it has like cilantro in it and you put it over rice and it's foolproof. And when I found out that she was responsible for that recipe, I said, Team Allison, I said.
Hashtag the stew for life.
I was up for hosting the stew, but I didn't get the gig.
It's like the soup, but the bits are like older and chunkier somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
You're doing the stew in 2020 is like all fucking I love hip hop.
Right, it's just
loving hip hop jokes.
It's yeah. like you make stew from scraps that you have no other use for. That's what that show was.
It comes on after the soup, and it's just like a more
right.
tired host kind of
right.
articulate.
It's like, all right, well, let's see what we can make out of this.
Here's a reality show nobody watches.
Yeah, here's a commercial, I guess.
Here's another commercial.
Oh, God.
Do you experience stress, anxiety, chronic pain, or have trouble sleeping at least once a week? You're probably going, yeah, Gabers, that sounds like me. Well, many of us do. I personally am experiencing stress and anxiety, chronic pain to a lesser degree, and I definitely have trouble sleeping. And for me, I discovered Feels. Feels is a premium CBD company that delivers directly to your doorstep. CBD naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. For me, I take a big dose before bed, sometimes along with some THC or depending on my last consumption of THC. I'll just take straight CBD, a few drops under the tongue, and you feel the difference within minutes. The thing about CBD is you got to find your right dose. And so you got to experiment a little bit, titrate it up, titrate it down. But if you're new to CBD overall, Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience. So do yourself a favor and join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. You'll save money on every order and you can pause or cancel at any time. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/mighty, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's F-E-A-L-S
BLS.com/mighty to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feels.com/mighty. FEALS.com/MIGHTY. Get that CBD popping. How is this transition to plant-based diet? How's that going for you?
It's not as hard as I thought. The hard thing is fish. Fish sneaks into my diet, and I am trying to come to terms with it because I want to be... Well, maybe I'm too obsessed with labels. Maybe it's a matter of me wanting to call myself vegan instead of call myself pescatarian. And maybe it is just me trying to, you know, like... I am someone that does things at extremes, so I don't like being the person that's like, well, I'm going to do Meatless Monday. Like, it was when I decided, I said, look, I just am, and that was the way it was, and back in January. So the idea that I have been, you know, eating fish like once a week or something, I can either accept or I can work on or I can like let go of my attachment to how I'm defined. But maybe my body needs it. Maybe it's just something that I need to like permit myself as I go towards the next step. Maybe I do need to just like say, look, I eat fish. I did it for animal related reasons. I did not do it for anything having to do with health or weight loss or even environmentally. I just wanted the ability to opt out of any conversation whatsoever about people being cruel to animals just by saying nope, and to be able to shut it down and then not feel like I was, you know, living with a conscience of, well, you can't just not listen to stories about this and then also eat meat. So that was my version of, you know, my side of the street is clean, except for those fucking fish, because the fish keep swimming to my clean side of the street and I can't help but gobble them because I miss sushi and I miss, like, I like a tuna fish sandwich or like a grilled piece of salmon. And I'm like I said, I'm working on it. I'm trying to reconcile whether or not that's okay.
I mean, you didn't ask me for permission, but I'll say that any improvement you're doing to eat less animals is wondrous. You know what I mean? Like, if you're if you're eating fish once a week, that is so much better. And I think, and you said yourself that you're extreme, so I understand. Like, you do whatever makes you feel comfortable. Yeah. But I think a lot of people are so afraid to like, they're like, I'm not going to be fucking vegan. It's like, well, you could also just eat steak once a month and not like, I'm sort of on the, my wife doesn't eat beef and pork, and since because of quarantine I'm not like making her make me sausage or anything, so I've pretty much eliminated beef and pork from my diet, and we're so much more plant-based, and then we have chicken and fish every once in a while. I don't restrict my diet at all. If I'm out, I'll eat whatever I want, but just making these minor choices we've already reduced our consumption and so much, and it's like I think more people who are like me, who are like, I don't have any issues with eating. And like, if we just fucking were like, I have, you know, vegan till dinner or meatless Mondays, or I only eat beef and pork when I go to a restaurant and I can order high quality.
And who goes to restaurants anymore?
No one. Right. Exactly.
I mean, that's the idea. Honestly, the only thing besides the fish, the thing I miss most is cheese. And there is a book floating around by Neil Bernard, and I don't know if he is, because there's so many different like nutritionists and food people, and some of them are, you know, like so many people have their own agendas, and it's hard to say like who's this and who's that. But he does have a book about how cheese has this opioid effect and how like it's an addiction that takes a really long time to get over. And I am definitely feeling that very loud and clear. I mean, pizza was my favorite food. So to give that up was probably the hardest thing. It wasn't like I'm going around going, oh, I wish I could have a juicy burger. That's not what I miss at all.
Pizza is a tough one. When I was trying to eat like low carb, pizza and sandwiches were the two things I missed the most.
It's devastating. Although I will say with vegan, there is, so you can do a grilled cheese. It occurred to me recently that with a grilled cheese, it's really more about the texture and the like the bread and the whatever kind of butter substitute you like use for the bread, and that the cheese is kind of there almost as like a texture cultural like glue kind of thing, but you're really into the bread tasting this buttery kind of way. So I will say the grilled cheese is more doable than I have yet to find a really good vegan pizza so far, but I'm looking and I'm trying to use like bruschetta instead of cheese on the top so I can have the crust and make like a little, you know, like a good quality like olive oil and, you know, basil and tomato thing instead. But it's, you miss it. I mean, I don't know what to say. Maybe it'll go away in a year, but that's the thing I miss.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing I'm happy about. Like the more people who eat plant-based, the more mm-hmm. people who are prompted to design better cheese. You know what I mean? Like it's like if right. we're and you're onto something here because as a I consume cheese, but every once in a while I have vegan cheese, whether it's because I'm with one of my lactose intolerant friends or whatever. Yeah. And I think you're right. Hot and melted is where vegan cheese blossoms. At least
they're working toward it. That's what my vegan friend said. Now he said here's the thing about vegan cheese is you just have to wait. You just have to be patient because they're working on it.
But I find the cheese that they use in like something that's popular in LA is an Impossible Burger that is kind of.
I love the Impossible Burger.
Big fan of the Impossible Burger. Yeah, and they set it up like it's an In-N-Out burger. So it's like cheese, pickles, onions, or whatever. And whatever the nut cheese that they're using, when it's melted, it really hits like a Kraft single.
Well, a Vio Life. There's Vio Life. There's Daiya. And Daiya, then there's Daiya, the nut ones are their own thing. But yeah, Daiya, it really is, more about texture. But pizza, the cheese is the main thing. You're not going to have like an Impossible patty kind of like blending in. So it like that's when cheese is on display.
Right. Yeah. That's like a vegan charcuterie board is where it'll fall apart rapidly.
No, just give me a cracker and like have put some avocado on it. If you're going to, you know what I mean? Like at a certain point, it's just like, I just need to do without that. That's just a choice that I made.
Right. Right. Yeah. It is that weird thing too, where you're like, I don't eat meat or cheese, but I eat mm-hmm. exclusively simulations of it. Like that.
Right. And I acknowledge that's not terribly healthy in some ways of like process, but again, that's not why I did it. I did not. It's not about me. It's not about me.
You're not out there trying to save the seitan. You're doing this for animals. So.
Seitan, I don't mind. It's the tempeh I don't like. I don't like tempeh.
I don't like those textures. I do really enjoy Impossible Burger over Beyond. Yeah. Impossible just has, and it's crazy. I know what we're saying sounds insane to people who are just like, just have a fucking burger, dude.
Well, that's no one in America will ever make that illegal. I promise you. You'll always have that freedom. That is, you'll always be able to get a gun and you'll always be able to kill an animal if you feel like it in this country. You're in luck. There's no danger of that being taken away from you.
There's a certain person, there's a certain type of person in this country that can't think of anything but the slippery slope anytime mm-hmm. anything happens. Do you like remember like gay marriage people's fear were like, what's next? Men will be married to their dogs. And it's
right.
Like,
and you're like, why are you thinking about that?
Yeah. Why are you thinking? It's like,
why'd you say that? Why'd you bring that up?
Yeah. That feels a little too close to the front of your mind, bud. Are you?
Right. What's your dog like? Is she pretty? What's going on?
It's a slippery slope, and I hope we achieve that. We slip all the way down there.
Yeah, I can't wait to stick my cock in my dog's slippery slope. What? What's wrong with you?
I don't know why I named my dog Slippery Slope. That's that clearly points at it a little too much.
I guess it had something to do with her pussy. Yeah, people are terrible.
Yeah, people, and then that's the thing now too. It's like someone's like, "Oh, the new Impossible Burger for sale at Burger King," and then someone mm-hmm. will be like, "If they try to take away my cows, I'll fucking shoot."
About it. Yeah, it's like you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
Also,
don't worry about it.
No one's even saying switch over to processed meat completely, but maybe mm-hmm. if you have 7 burgers a week.
Yeah.
7 Why don't one day you have an Impossible and then that way you can just feel a little bit better about yourself?
Yeah. Or don't and put a gun in your mouth. I don't give a shit. At this point, country. I feel like I am. I've chosen my side. If there's a civil war, I'm not saying we're gonna win. I'm just saying I know what side I'm on. You know what I mean? Like, it's already begun, and I've chosen. Look, where it's coasts versus people with guns, and yeah. we're going to lose. But at least we'll know what we stand for when we go down in flames.
Yeah. If there was a true civil war, I know exactly what my role would be. It would
yeah,
be.
Yeah. What's that?
To be a spy for the. Because it's like, hey, look, dude, you have racist face. You have to, like, you have
Oh, that's interesting.
You look good in backwards hats, and you have a big beard. It's your job to go down to the protest and
interesting.
Wear
you
this
put on
Hawaiian
some
shirt
overalls
and, like,
yeah. and nothing underneath. The Confederate flag. Or see, not me. You could. I look like, you know, like Woody Allen's, like, like chunky sister. I have that Ashkenazi, like, redhead coloring where it's like dark eyes and red hair. And, like, I once went to Ireland and I was in a bar and I said, you know, people back home, like, sometimes say I look Irish, and they, like, literally laughed. And this old guy goes, he goes, yeah, East. He goes, you look Eastern European. He wow. thought that was the funniest thing in the world, that any American person would be so stupid as to see me and to think that I was anything besides a fucking Polak from the shtetl. I said, all right, buddy. All right, Matt. All right, McManus.
What a world, all right? I'm a redhead, a ginger. I'm being roasted in America. Everyone keeps saying I'm Irish. You go to Ireland. They're like, you're not fucking Irish.
Oh, fuck you. Keep, oh, please.
Keep
Come
heading
on. Yeah, right. Nice one. They laughed in my face. Which is fine. Can handle it.
New York food. The shit we're discussing is shit I miss big time. We're talking pizza, okay. Chinese food, and I want to okay. give you. I'm going to give you.
What's
a little...
your favorite pizza, by the way, when you are here?
Ooh, I will say, and it's more. This is nostalgia more than anything else. And this
Joe's. Joe's.
Rose's Pizza and Pasta in Penn Station.
Oh no!
Yes, yes.
John,
I swear. I'm sorry. I
that
commute.
Sounds like drunk John making the decisions for.
Yeah,
for
it sounds like
John.
Someone has a Long Island tattoo on their bicep. Might enjoy Aww. Rose's Pizza and Pasta and a giant Sam Adams with a straw in it for the commute.
Oh my God! For the commute. That's so funny.
That is like my. I think that's a very New York slice because it come. It's like you. Mm-hmm. I'm a giant fucking. Insatiable animal, and I can eat yeah. one slice of that and have to go to bed on the floor of Penn Station.
Oh, it's that big?
It's heavy. It's like legit, it's very good. And you so can get good. Like a $4 62-ounce beer, you know, like in uh-huh. a fucking big gulp with a straw.
Wow,
love
That's
that
heavenly.
Place.
Yeah, I like a big slice too. And you know, I also really like his shitty pizza. I love 99-cent pizza. I love like a square like Sicilian that looks like it could have been from a cafeteria.
Oh yeah, bowling alley pizza is what we call that. Like
heaven.
Birthday
heaven.
Party pizza.
Yeah, because it's doughy. I don't like a thin crisp crust. I like having my seeing like my own body like in front of me before I eat it, which is doughy and dense.
Yeah.
And I,
same here. Doughy, cheesy,
like
and a dash of sauce.
Cheesy, yeah. You know, like there's some divots which could be dimples. It could be my stomach, my belly button. You never know. And I don't like too much sauce. I like, you know, I like to taste the bread and the cheese. And then I don't. The only thing I'm not crazy about pizza wise is there's a couple slices at Two Boots I've always really loved. I love the Larry Tate, which is the like white pizza with garlic
yes.
and spinach and like tomatoes.
Yeah.
But I don't like the Cajun. Like I don't like spicy sauce. And like the cornmeal crust. Like that just bums me out. It's not my thing. It's not my favorite.
I like pizza flexing on toppings. I find that to be I like throwback mm-hmm. like I lived by Lucali and and House of Pizza and Calzones in Brooklyn's House of Pizza and Calzones, which were two of my favorite mm-hmm. pizza places. More but I also like a pizza where they're like this is like growing up on Long Island there was this place Gino's. They're actually like
yes.
a mini
I've
regional
heard of
chain.
Gino's. Yes.
Yeah. It's like where anytime a relative dies, where you get a Gino's gift card is like the most Italian Long Island shit ever.
That sounds amazing.
It is. It is awesome. When my wife, who's from Westchester, we dated in college.
Oh, where in Westchester?
She's from Croton-on-Harmon.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. There's some beautiful restaurants there too that have a really nice view. I've been there for like Mother's Day and things.
Yeah, it is like and Scarsdale is like one of those too, where you're like, we can go to like a nice waterside restaurant or small cutesy town.
Scarsdale doesn't really have water as much as they just have good schools, and they have like that little area by the train station where you could get like a $75 hoodie, and yeah. You know, it's like very much about like. Right. It's very statusy, but it's not beautiful the way that like suburbs on the Hudson are beautiful.
Right. Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. I remember it from my, I commuted to the city from Poughkeepsie my senior year of school. So I remembered all the Metro North stops and like they all are burned into my head. I'm like, Spuyten Duyvil. I don't know what the fuck that is or where that
right.
is.
Right. 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 Oh, yes. I remember all of those stops. But so she's from Westchester.
She's from Westchester. I'm from Long Island. And in the summers in college, when I would go up to visit, I'd bring Gino's pizza to her brothers and her uncles and her family, and I was like a fucking hero to bring this.
Yeah.
I'd drive fucking an hour and 45 minutes with two buffalo chicken pizzas in my car, fucking reeking of blue cheese and hot sauce by the time I pull up. But like, I was a king bringing fucking New York pizza to.
They said, we will give you our. What is that when you like give your daughter away to someone? They're like, she's yours.
Yeah, it's like
giving you consent to wed.
It's my you may have my daughter's
dowry.
Yeah, my dowry is two pizzas.
My dowry is eating the pizzas you brought.
it's really good pizza, but I will not tell my wife I traded two large pies for her with her
other
father.
East Coast pizza phenomenons include Pepe's in Connecticut. People love their fucking clam pies.
I love that clam pie. I really do love Frank Pepe's. It's so good.
And then Mamaroneck has some really outstanding Italian. Do you know Mamaroneck? It's also on the water. And there's Sal's is there, which is really outstanding.
Oh, I have not had Mamaroneck
pizza. Sal's is great. It's right across from the old movie theater where I saw the first Batman.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah. My favorite New York slice, I really like the one in the opening credits of Louie where he throws it away. That's Ben's. Because there's two Ben's. There's Ben's on Spring, and then there's Ben's on West 3rd and McDougal. And I really like the one on West 3rd and McDougal.
I pretty much agree with everything Louie does and likes.
Oh, like, really? You want to go on the record of saying that? Cool.
Put me on the record that I like his pizza, his comedy, and his belief system about social interaction.
And how he can't control himself around pizza. And like I said, those 99-cent places are really good.
The one that stands out in my mind is that Hell's Kitchen one, the one that over by Port Authority, that dollar slice place. I used to work not too far from there, so I would drink over by there at Lansdowne Road. And sometimes I would just wander over and get that dollar fucking slice. And I could eat that in one block. I would be like, just heat it up a little bit and I'll be finished before I get on the A train. I love it.
No, I miss it. I miss it. That's the only thing I miss. Everything else I could do without. Because it's easy to eat vegan junk food. Junk food and vegan, there's nothing that you're going to miss out on as far as like cakes, cookies, sweets, like candy. Like, oh, please, you're taken care of well underway. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You don't need to worry about any kind of dairy or eggs like getting in the way of your joy in that particular department.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I was thinking because like vegan food that's also fun is shit like chicken nuggets, flavored, but like you can anything that's like sort of that Trader Joe's, the Trader Joe's throw in the oven and heat up, like oh, it's a puff pastry with vegetables inside. Like
I know, and I have to be better about eating fewer processed foods and more about like, oh, is LA still all over the fucking bowls? Because I have to say, the bowls bum me out. The bowls where like all the ingredients are like separated, but they're still in a bowl, and you're like, I don't know how to make one, and I don't know what dressing goes with it. I like I like a poke bowl. I know that those ingredients are good because I like sushi.
I like poke bowls. I like the weird like. I call them weird. I'm sorry, they're not weird, but like the vegan bowls. That's like it's almond butter, blueberries, bananas, asahi, and you stir it up, and it's like a brownish sludge.
No, make me a smoothie or go fuck off. I don't want to. This is like
that's a T-shirt, by the way. Make me a smoothie or
this a smoothie. Because that's like I remember reading, and I don't know if he still is, but I remember reading about Woody Harrelson being a raw vegan, and his whole thing was you gotta love a salad, man. You gotta love love a salad. What a terrible life to have a different version of a salad, like three meals a day. And that's what those things remind me of. And they completely bum me out. Maybe get used to it.
Have you traveled yet since going plant-based? Because I find that's when New York and L.A. vegans or gluten-free heads or celiacs,
yes,
or whatever.
Yes, yes.
When you travel is when shit hits the fan, is when you're like, oh, I don't have my go-to place where I know I can get this snack, or
yeah,
there's not a fucking Erewhon on my corner where I can get.
Absolutely. It's challenging traveling with allergies, let alone traveling with vegan stuff too. But the good news is I usually don't really go anywhere that isn't like an urban, you know. Right, I was in Toronto and they couldn't have been nicer or more accommodating, or, you know, I got like an oat milk latte in the morning from my hotel, and they were incredibly, you know, accommodating. And the same thing. And last time I was in LA, I said to the chef at like the restaurant of the hotel I was staying at, I said, listen, I'm vegan. He goes, well, we don't have that many vegan options in the menu. And he was like, we just have these seven. Are you joking? And he goes, oh, you're not from here. And I said, wow, wowie, wow. Okay, guys. Which was cool.
That is some legit LA shit. It's like, sorry, LA. We only have seven vegan
yes.
options.
Yeah, exactly. So far that's been so good. But then again, I don't, you know, I'm lucky enough not to have, you know, family or like a spouse that lives in a part of the country that is just going to be really tough for me to do anything besides sit in the dark eating crackers.
Right. Where you're like,
which I can do. It's not below me. You could like, always get like a, you know,
a mushroom cap on the grill, you know, like when the vegan option is just a giant portobello.
You know, Julia Child, by the way, who I don't know that much about, but I know she said two things, which I really appreciate. One is actually something I disagree with, which is why she always liked French. She always thought French food was superior to Italian food, because French food was more about like combining ingredients and making them into like another completely different thing. Whereas Italian food is literally like, hey, look, I cut this tomato in half.
Yeah.
And
Italian
me,
food is like, yeah, make this meat reddish.
Exactly. And you just sort of like, you pick ingredients and you combine them and then you're ready to eat. Whereas the French are just like, I've invented this 12-step sauce. And you're like, congratulations. All I want is a fucking like plate of spaghetti. But the thing that Julia Child said, which I think about all the time, is that she doesn't like grilled vegetables because they are both burnt and raw at the same time.
Ah.
I thought that was brilliant. Brilliant. So when some piece of shit like tosses a pepper on the grill and thinks that you're happy, he is wrong. He is wrong, and he needs to be way more thoughtful about the fact that, look, it's very easy to, if you burn a vegan hot dog, you're fine. You're really just after like something salty with a good enough texture that you're going to surround with a bun and enough condiments that you're just going to be happy anyway. And same thing with burgers, I think. I mean, I don't know. I'm also not someone that's ever like loved meat. So I,
right,
you know, I don't want to like speak to an experience that people really are going to miss with that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. That makes sense. Here's another, and this will be like a three-hit combo here. It combines Jewish and Italian culture, and it's a real New York food that's lacking out here.
Yes.
The deli.
Yeah. Well, you guys have Cantors, right?
We have Cantors, but
what else? Anything
that would be
else?
Like having, that would be, yes, there's another one that people really like that is, the name is escaping me at the moment. Mm-hmm. But like, like in New York, you have the bodega, which is sort of takes up a little bit of, but there are true Italian and Jewish delis everywhere. But then there's also like a bagel place or a bodega that you can get bagels and get delis. That the sandwich, like the quick grab sandwich for under $10 just does not exist in Los Angeles.
When you say quick grab, you mean they're already made?
No, I mean like, you can pop in.
Oh, just going into a deli and being like, I want like pastrami on rye, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Especially like a late night sandwich is maybe the main thing I miss most from New York.
Got it.
Here, let me run you through this little anecdote. There's a place that opened right by my house called Uncle Paulie's, which is credits itself to be in a New York Italian style deli. So
like Heroes?
Yeah. So it's Heroes. And you know, and it's like we're making sandwiches over here. You know, we're Paul Uncle Paulie's. So I'm like, this is exactly what I've been waiting for. I go there, I get like a $9 Italian sandwich, and it's on like brioche, and the amount of meat is like a centimeter thick, and I'm like,
what?
This is not New York style sandwiches. I get
that's not, I don't even know what that is. What Italian person uses brioche as a base?
Yeah, what Italian? Yeah, and then like. I'm talking, I want that sandwich where the cross section is like, oh, I could see 40 slices of fucking turkey or prosciutto,
yes,
or whatever.
It should
I'm
be a rainbow.
Exactly. And these people, and then.
That makes me sick.
I want to give them another chance because someone's like, have you, no one I trust, but everyone always goes, have you had Uncle Paulie's? So recently I was like, I'll try it again.
Yeah.
And it was during quarantine. So I walk up to do takeout and I walk up and I go, hey, can I get the Italians, whatever this one, hot and sweet peppers? And the woman goes, yeah, sure. To go. I'm like, I mean, obviously it's to go. And she's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, that should be about 25, 30 minutes. And I go,
what are you doing? You picking the peppers?
That's what I said. I said, I go for just the sandwich. It's 30 minutes. She goes, yeah. And then this is the shit that broke my heart. And she was like, we have a lot of Postmates orders to get through. And I went, I'm a fucking man,
I'm a
person standing at your restaurant. You can't cut ahead and just whip me up one sandwich.
I'm a man standing in front of a woman who's
I am
telling
a white
me it's
string.
Gonna take 30 minutes to put my pickled peppers on my... Well, did you wait? Did you wait? Was it worth the wait?
No, I can't stand here for 30 minutes and wait for a sandwich. That's...
Uh-huh.
That's insane. The New Yorker in me would just not allow that. I was like, I'll just eat a fucking like ring ding from a liquor store.
Well, you guys, though, you do wait for, I guess, takeout, right? Because you like order. Well, I guess it's all different from COVID. But I just remember there's a lot of like pickup more than delivery. And so you do have to be like, OK, we'll swing by in like 30 minutes. Is that not heard of anymore?
Yeah, we especially in COVID, takeout is picked up because...
Right.
I think, and I did a fair amount of delivery, and I would say amongst the apps, I'm at like a 25% hit rate of getting the right thing at a decent time. Like, and I'm spending and everything feels overcharged. And,
right.
And recently me and my wife have just been slightly better about who's being designated drivers to do pickup. It's like, all right.
That's what I was going to say is you can't do pickup when it's just you. Where are you going to park? And
yeah, it gets difficult. And then also, like, the reason I'm usually ordering is because I'm like, oh, I'm fucked up. Let's get some quesadillas delivered.
Yeah, you have to be hungry, and that's a terrible place to order food from. Yeah,
exactly. And so then we start doing takeout, and everything's like $80 cheaper. It's like, it's just crazy. Like, skipping Postmates or Grubhub and just calling a restaurant and doing pickup like it's 2007 or whatever.
Right.
And it's so fucking convenient.
Right,
and
so that's
much
what they
cheaper.
Want you to do, and they're not going to be screwed by the apps. And yeah, I hear you.
And I just had to get over one hump of laziness, and all we need is like 5 minutes of foresight before I smoke or before my wife pours a drink. Is like, wait, should we discuss how we're going to get this food?
Yes, 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 like, you must have that conversation. Well, deli wise, New York City no longer has Carnegie Deli, which was really more of like at a certain point became a midtown tourist attraction more than anything else. I mean, I don't think people were there because the sandwiches tasted good as much as they were, you know, just like the way that like a steakhouse would have that Mississippi mud pie that was just like really tall. So it was more about the presentation than it was about whether it wasn't actually a good slice of cake. But it's still a bummer that it's gone.
That's where there's like a little mean to you, right? That's like they get a little light wiener circle at that one.
Maybe. I was never a Carnegie Deli frequenter. I've always been a Second Avenue Deli fan. And I know that they're expensive, but I really do think it's worth it. I think Second Avenue Deli is a real New York deli. I think Katz's Deli is a tourist attraction and it's for alcoholics.
Yes.
People that are just like, they want to line up and they, of course, and it's a wonderful experience to take a number and, you know, tip the guy and he'll give you more meat and all that stuff. It's really a fun experience to have in New York City. But, you know, Second Avenue Deli will not put fucking cheese on your sandwich. Like they won't, you know, they won't put mayonnaise. Like there are things that Katz's does that are just not what kosher deli or Jew. I don't even say kosher, Jewish delis.
Right.
Do. And so yeah, for I that mean, the reason, cardinal it's like sin the Disney of, world. Of, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the cardinal sin is meat and cheese together. And if they're slapping.
No, you can't. Right. Exactly. So Second Avenue Deli is meat. And then separate from that is appetizing, which is Russ and Daughters and all the bagel places.
Oh,
and that's
yes,
always
yes.
been my weaknesses has always been like the, you know, the kugel and the different kinds of cream cheese and all the different kinds of salmon. And that stuff is just my favorite.
Are you a bagel fan?
Love bagels. Love bagels. Of course, absolutely.
Bagels are a fucking dream. I love a breakfast sandwich on a bagel. This is like whenever we go to Long Island, it's like we go to Bagel Town Cafe in Belmore and get a giant iced coffee, a bagel sandwich.
Yeah.
What's your bagel? I mean, I know now you're vegan. But
right. Now I've been doing like tofu cream cheese and I put like, you know, cucumbers and basil and like red onion and tomato on it because tofu cream cheese isn't delicious. It's just tofu is very like adaptable. It can taste like anything you really want it to.
Yeah, and so you think the tofu cream cheese comes out decent.
It's not delicious. It like I said, it like adapts to its surroundings. So if you mix in vegetables, it's going to taste like the vegetables.
If you slap a piece of lox on there,
then it's not vegan, and that's why I'm having a hard time struggling with the fish of it all.
Because I love a bagel with cream cheese and lox.
I know, me too. I just might have to come to terms with the fact that I'm pescatarian. But no, I love like a vegetable cream cheese. In the past, my traditional, I mean, I've never been one to put meat on bagels just because bagels to me have always been dairy. And dairy in Jewish terms also includes fish because the Jews are so disrespectful to the fish. And maybe this is part of my inherent like resistance to being completely vegan is that like
it's
the
cultural.
Jews have always considered the fish a vegetable. A fish is not meat. So you can have meat, which is pastrami and chicken and all that stuff. But then dairy is milk and fish. Fish is considered like, I mean, how mean is that to fish? It's really mean.
Is it because fish don't make their own milk? And like, that's like the loophole, right?
That's never once occurred to me.
Ah, because I always thought.
They don't. That's interesting that milk begets meat. I don't know. I just know that. It's the way that the Pope decided a capybara was a fish because they didn't want to not eat them during Lent. And you're like, okay, weirdo.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Okay, you jerk. I declare that this is a fish. It's obviously not, but fine.
Anyone who says religion and science butt heads, it's like, no,
please.
They don't. It's like, this guy's like, yo, that's a fish now. It's like, no, that's
fuck
not
you.
How that
if you want to eat an animal, go for it, but don't, you know, piss on my leg and tell me it's raining. Come on.
Wait, wasn't that the name of Judge Judy's book?
Yeah, it's the only book I've ever read.
I've read the Torah and Don't Piss on My Leg and Tell Me It's
Raining. Yes, I've read the entire Torah. What a book. A lot of ups, a lot of downs.
I might do it on audiobook this summer while I work out.
Why not? What a great... Yeah, that'll definitely keep you motivated because the Jews love working. I mean, exercise has really been our number one passion since the beginning of time. We really love getting shredded.
I've heard a specific passage from the Torah 70 times in my life just due to
which one?
Whatever they say at the bar mitzvah and bat mitzvahs. Whatever the...
You mean the prayer?
Yeah.
At the beginning of the... Because here's the thing about bar and bat mitzvahs is every bar and bat mitzvah, they read a different part of the Torah.
Oh, so maybe I've...
I'm about
maybe
to blow
know,
your mind. Maybe yeah, I'm about I know to blow your thing. Mind. So this is the thing. You're based on when you were born. So they read the Torah all year round. So by the time you get to Rosh Hashanah, you're up to the part about Rosh Hashanah. By the time you get to Passover, you're about to part
cool.
about Passover. Right. So if I have my bat mitzvah in April, because they read the Torah little by little every week, it will be a so Jews will be like, what was your Torah portion about? And someone will say, mine was, you know, whatever it was. Mine was like Joseph and the amazing Technicolor dream coat, or mine was this. Mine was about, you know, Jacob not wanting to kill Isaac last minute and then, you know, God said you did good or whatever the fucking story is. Jonah and the whale. My Torah portion was about which animals were and weren't kosher, which is the stupidest, most boring part of, I mean, I don't want to say the stupidest, most boring, because there's a lot of stupid stuff that's either boring or just like shitty. There's the one about Lot's daughters, which is totally gross and weird. But mine was literally about like, if an animal chews its own cud, it is not kosher. But if it has, you know, if it has like flight of fin, like it was just such a stupid, awful, you know, portion. But that's what you do during your bar bat mitzvah. And the stuff that you've heard a million times is the prayer that goes before it, which is like, thank you, God, for giving us this Torah that we're about to read from. Hallelujah. Like, that's basically the thing that you say before you get to the thing.
Ah, so that's what I'm familiar with.
Yep. You learn something. And then I will also say that the song is basically the same, because there's only like four or five, I don't want to say four or five, maybe like 10 or 12 like sounds that you kind of connect when you're reading the Torah. So like da 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 da. So you just have to exchange. That's the melody. You're just gonna switch up the lyrics.
That literally was like the Muppets present the Torah. Like that, the way that sounded. Like it was like,
yeah,
I could see like Sesame Street teaching the Torah in that way.
Yeah, it's like, and then it ends with ba ba da 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 ba ba da 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 da. It sucks. And then you get a nice juicy challah, and everybody loves a challah.
Oh man, bar and bat mitzvahs were a dream come true for a 14-year-old Gentile. It's just like,
slice up a challah, the best, right?
Oh, food, like sort of unattended booze in a way at some places.
Oh yeah, because we're not drinking that. That's for you guys.
Yeah.
We're just more interested in the food. And then usually after a bar and bat mitzvah, the shul will provide like manischewitz, a bunch of challahs, and then like a lot of tuna salads. Like, more people don't understand how much mayonnaise is involved in Judaism, because mayonnaise is considered to be such a, like, you know, white bread kind of food.
Yeah.
But we use mayonnaise a lot. There's a lot of tuna salad, a lot of potato salad. There's definitely a generous amount of that. Of that condiment in our culture for some reason.
Mayo has no animal byproduct in it, right?
It does. It has eggs.
Oh shit!
It has eggs. Yeah,
I was gonna say mayo is a solid grilled cheese butter substitute.
Oh, I've never used. I've never done that. Not to be like gross, because you know, obviously, like there's mayo in chocolate cake that's supposed to be outstanding.
Yeah.
You know, like sour cream and chocolate cake, when I used to bake that way, like, was always outstanding. I have found that when it comes to like substitutes, when it comes to baking, not that you're a baker, but if anyone listening is a baker, vinegar is a really great substitute for eggs, just because it leavens and it burns off in the oven. You're not going to taste anything that tastes like vinegar. It just does a really good job of, it's just like a neutral leavening agent, and you don't need to worry about, like, I don't know, there's some funky egg substitutes that kind of like weird me out. They can smell a little sulfuric. Vinegar, just keep in mind, vinegar is a good thing to put into a cake. Experiment with it. I promise. It's not going to be gross.
That makes a lot of sense. That sounds
awesome. Yeah. And definitely be liberal with your baking powder and baking soda when it comes to that stuff. Like I said, it's not hard to make vegan sweets. That's easy. It's the other stuff that's challenging.
Do you have a go-to vegan sweet you make for yourself, or if you have to bring somewhere to like sell people on your vegan sweets, do you have a...
That's a really good question.
A high hit rate one.
There's a really great coconut cake recipe on Smitten Kitchen, which is one of my favorite websites. She's actually beginning to write more vegan recipes, but I love her. She's a beautiful writer, Deb Perlman. So she's got a cake recipe on there called Plush Coconut Cake, which is excellent, always a hit. And then you can mess around with the frosting. Like, I made like a tofu-y cream cheese frosting instead of like a drizzle. But it's very easy, and it doesn't have any strange ingredients where you have to be like, what the hell is, you know, how do I get agar? Or what's that stuff that they call, like, you make meringue out of like the liquid that's in like chickpea, like when you open a thing of chickpeas and there's like liquid. I think that's called like aquavita or something. And people can make. I know. And I'm like, I don't. Come on. I can't. I could barely open a can of sauce for my noodles. So I don't go there. But the plush coconut cake recipe, I strongly recommend.
Oh, that sounds fucking delicious.
It's good. It's good.
Smitten Kitchen was the...
Smitten Kitchen is one of my favorite recipe websites. It's beautifully... Oh. I love her writing and her recipes are terrific. I really recommend it.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll check that out.
Yeah.
Before we get out of here, one last thing.
Yes.
What, I'm trying to think of like, are there any foods that are like low-key New York foods for like people who... We all know pizza, deli sandwiches, Chinese food. Is there something that I'm like... Am I missing something that I didn't realize was very like that New York pulled off very well?
That we pulled off that we're really good at, like that's foolproof or that's
yeah, some
because we're still figuring out. I feel like we're still circling like the banh mi stuff. We can't hold. Listen, we're never going to compete with you guys when it comes to sushi. You guys have the best sushi. I guess because it's West Coast.
I don't fully understand how that ends up.
I don't know how either, but
we're like
it's
4 hours closer to Japan.
You guys are not screwing around when it comes to sushi. You really, sushi and avocados, there's just, you're not going to, and also like a lot of fruits, like your strawberries are sweeter.
The produce game out here is kind of strong. And that's like the biggest change I've seen was like,
absolutely.
Just the way produce looks out here.
Absolutely. But there's a couple of like, you know, my favorite restaurants. There's that place Parm, which is really nice. Frank is still holding court, even though there was like a COVID related thing connected to it. Second Avenue Deli, I'll love till the day I die. And then Veselka, which is a mainstay, which is still kicking ass. Yeah. Polish food.
Oh, the sweet potato pierogies are, I'm just such a fan of those. I mean, I'm a fan of a lot of that shit on the menu.
Absolutely. Veselka is, I mean, When that goes out of business, I might have to leave New York because that is just Veselka is my favorite. And it's still 24 hours. It's still, you know, in the East Village, as much as the East Village has changed, that sort of stays the same. And then it has a bigger diner menu for people that are like, I don't know what pierogies or stuffed cabbage are all about. You can still get your stupid hamburger or whatever. But no, they have the best... Linses, and I like I personally like a boiled pierogi over a fried pierogi because it's just doughier.
I don't mind at all.
I like I like a very mushy dumpling. Fat is less important to me than like starch. But yeah, I love it. And there's soups and yeah.
You just outed my OnlyFans name, Mushy Dumpling.
I'm sorry. It'll be private. It'll be our secret.
Yes. Please, Emma, edit this part out where she reveals my...
Don't you dare edit it out, Emma.
Klausner, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. It was a delight chatting with you.
Since I accidentally ran into you at Beetlejuice on Broadway.
Oh, I love Beetlejuice. I wish I don't know what's going to happen with Broadway, but I love that show.
That was a wonderful show. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
I loved it.
And then I saw you there and I was like, oh, I should have Klausner on my podcast. And then when you and Sharpling launched yours, I was like, well, now I have a reason.
Absolutely. And please listen to Double Threat because I love it and I do it every week with my pal Tom Sharpling, who I've known for over a decade and who's kind of like my idol when it comes to all matters of comedy and podcasting. And so to be able to do this show with him weekly and to make each other laugh every week has just been, I mean, it's definitely been, I don't want to say like a highlight of 2020 as much as one of the only good things that's happened this year is I get to have fun doing that show and people seem to like it and they send us stuff to goof on and it's just I just love doing it so much. So please listen to it and it's called Double Threat. It's on the Forever Dog Network and
wherever you get
it's
podcasts.
It's just two funny people having fun. It's just but people making, you know, funny people making each other laugh. There's worse things.
Yeah, you guys are fucking hysterical and
have been
in a lot of different ways separate of each other. So it's exciting that you guys are doing this together.
Thanks. And no, it's so fun.
I know it's well past the point and it's like not going to get you any, it's not going to get you any extra cash or anything, but Difficult People is so fucking funny. If people haven't ripped through all of that, it's out, it's on Hulu, right?
It's still streaming. Hulu. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I highly recommend if you're just like in the time of people are throwing on half hour comedies to just to feel good.
Yeah,
highly
stop
recommend
your time.
Yeah, just put on. You can watch a season in an afternoon, and the show is. You guys are. It's so joke dense and
yes,
and such a strong point of view.
Thank you.
It's exactly what people like in comedy. Like,
I hope so. I had a blast. I mean, it was the thing I'm proudest of, and I just love it so much, and I miss it. So
yeah,
you guys
were so fucking good together, and it was such a funny show. So
thank you.
Yeah, please. Thank you for making it. So check out Difficult People. Check out Double Threat. And Julie, want to drop your social media where people can find you?
Nah.
All right, perfect. Hunt her out. She'll be tagged in the post about this fucking episode.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum podcast.